in 35 years of ghost hunting and working with other paranormal investigators. I've never come across anybody who wanted to deal with the dark side. Until now. Welcome. I'm Al Cooley, host of Ghost in the Valley. I've been waiting a long time to have the next guest on. Coming to you all the way from England, Beth Darlington. She has been investigating paranormal activity in Australia, UK, and numerous other places. And Beth is the first paranormal investigator that loves the challenge of the dark side. But before we get into Beth, I will periodically be promoting other podcasts. If you like the paranormal, unsolved mysteries, true crime, conspiracy, you'll love Weird on the Rocks.
This is Weird on the Rocks, a podcast that explores the weird, unusual, strange, and unexplained, all while getting our drink on. Join me every other Monday as I share a different cocktail and discuss true crime, paranormal stories, unexplained phenomena, conspiracy theories, and much more. Find Weird on the Rocks on social media, the website weirdontherocks.weebly.com, and listen on all of your favorite podcast apps. And don't forget to cheers and stay weird.
Make sure you check out Weird on the Rocks podcast. And now, Beth Darlington. All right, I'm excited today to have Beth Darlington on my show. She's a paranormal investigator out of Australia. Is that correct, Beth?
Yes and no. You are half right. I've been based in Australia for a very long time, most of my life, but I've only just recently moved to the UK. So yes, I'm Australian, but I'm also from the UK, so you are about half right.
Oh, sorry about that.
That's completely fine. It's all good. There you go. I've covered both.
How long have you been interested in the paranormal?
Well, that's one of the best questions a lot of us who are so that active when it comes to investigating want to find out, because most of the time it's due to an experience. And I had an experience when I was 16. My dad had a beautiful old house in a place in Australia called Western Australia, but it was about an hour's drive from Perth. And that's a long time for some cities, but not so much for others. Australia's a great, beautiful, big country. 90% of us live on the coast. So if you're travelling anywhere for paranormal stuff, you've often got to go a fair bit away. And this particular house, when I was much younger, it had four floors to it. So when I first stayed over, when I was probably about 16, not talking about how old I was at the time, it was my sister and I stayed in the same room, and you know, my dad had actually painted the whole interior by that point. So he just moved into this place. He was going to make it into a bed and breakfast, and he said, "Right, this is what I'm going to do." And I had beautiful history and old sandstone, and you can imagine this old country town. And in Australia, you couldn't get any more sort of rustic in the way it looked, like the wrought iron and the picket fences, and just was absolutely beautiful. Still is, still a working bed and breakfast today. And my sister and I stayed over on that first night. It was our very first night in that place. And as we were drifting off to sleep, we heard something slide off the walls. And it was just one more. And it was one item just seemed to kind of slide off it. And I just thought, oh, well, something's fallen off the walls. You know, I'll talk to Dad in the morning or in the kitchen area, because the kitchen was the biggest area we can go and kind of sit and talk, because it was still built like a communal commercial kitchen, which was quite big, right? Because we didn't really have a lot of furniture at the time, or he didn't at the time. And so that's kind of where we had breakfast in the morning. So we would, we kind of convened the next day, and sort of one of us kind of had enough strength or gumption, as we say, to mention it. Said, oh, Dad, you know, I know something, there was a movement or something last night, you know, obviously something's fallen off the walls. And he kind of just jovially looked at it. My sister and I went, what are you talking about? We just had the whole place painted inside. There's nothing on the walls at all. Nothing could be hanging from anywhere. We've got nothing here. I said, are you sure? He goes, no, there'd be nothing. There'd be no reason why anything would slide off anything. And, looking back now, I wish I had my investigator hat on. I would have gone through that place at the time it would have happened, but clearly that was not the case. So I can't confirm and or deny if it was anything possibly paranormal, but the first thing it really did was intrigue it. And a lot of people, as you would know, who is fascinated by this particular topic will often say that the interest has always been there, and sometimes it can take an event to actually take it to the next level where they start to really ask questions and find out for themselves. And that's exactly where it started for me.
Correct. I mean, that's very interesting, because it reminds me a lot of the same thing with me. I mean, my first one was around 14. And same thing with my sister and myself. My parents bought an old home, and it seems like it only happened when my parents were gone for the night. They always like to go out dancing on the weekend, you know. So my sister's room was right next to my room, and it started that, almost like yours. I mean, but she was seeing a vision of a young girl in front of her room. I've never seen her, but I heard, you know, like the walking up the steps, nobody there, like wooden steps, and we had carpeted steps. And there was nobody there, and heavy breathing in the walls, and it was just, we both heard it. But we went to tell our parents about that, you know, naturally they didn't believe us. That went on almost 4 years. When we moved out of the house, my mother said to the landlord that what we were concerned about a ghost or something in the house, and she was laughing about it. But the landlord, I remember standing next to my mother, he was like, no, there was a young girl who hung herself in the attic in the late 1800s, and she has been known to show herself to a lot of my renters. And so what was weird was we thought that was it, and then almost 30 years later my sister calls me and says in her job one of her clients came to her and was giving her his address, and it was the same address that the house we thought was haunted. And she says she didn't say anything like the house was haunted or put off any signal that way. And the gentleman was like, leaned forward to her and says, well, was that house haunted? You know, and it's like sent chills up her back, like, okay, it confirmed mine and her story. But his side of it was violent, you know, and our side was never violent. It was just like a young girl just trying to communicate mainly to my sister. Nothing violent, just images and noise. And his says no. It was very violent. That there was things thrown off the wall, off the counter. I mean, he says it was just very violent. And they finally got out of there. But 20 years after that, the house burned down with the landlord's son in it. That was my first experience.
That's one thing I find quite interesting in Australia. That by law, if you buy a place, they have to let you know if someone has passed away in it. But if you're renting a place, they actually don't have to disclose that that's actually happened at all. And that's really interesting, because the previous place I left before moving over to the UK, somebody had passed away across the road of a heart attack. And it was an elderly couple, and her husband had passed. And then they did the whole garage sale. They sold everything up, but they kept the place and they rented it out. And I often thought, geez, I wonder if the family that moved didn't actually have any idea that someone has actually passed away in that place, or if that would have changed their thoughts on actually wanting to rent the place. And obviously, as you and I both know, being so interested in this fascinating topic. I wonder if something's actually happened in there since then. I know it sounds really horrible and morbid, like this person is not even cold in the ground, you know, and I'm sitting there thinking, I wonder if they're experiencing any different things that they normally would, having lived anywhere else. So that's where that comes from. It's not from a disrespect to the person that had passed away in that place at all.
Is there a difference between a ghost and a spirit? With my sister and I, was that a ghost, a spirit, or a poltergeist? Because, you know, poltergeist is more violent. Talking with other paranormal investigators, they don't believe in passing the spirit on. They believe if you get rid of a spirit, it kills the spirit.
Mm.
Fascinating, you know.
Wow. Oh, of course. It's, as you say, it really does depend on where your beliefs lie. But then, you know, if we're to say there is the possibility of an afterlife, then what other beliefs or whatever who's passed on has an impact in. So maybe somebody who's passed on might be Buddhist, but someone's passed on in someone's home that might be Buddhist would, you know, obviously sort of somebody from the church being able to try and clear if there was to be any sort of disruption of some sort from possible spiritual perspective make any impact at all. You know, it's how does it work on the other side? You know, we have such a strong belief system here of what happens when we pass, and so many different versions from so many different ways of life that, you know, what happens when we pass? Does it kind of all mix in the same, or does it actually matter? I guess it almost comes onto the same argument of, you know, if you were to go into a beautiful 15th century French castle and to talk to them in English, would they understand it, or would you have to speak in French to be able to see whether or not that would be something that would be able to elicit more of a communication? I guess to me that's kind of where that sort of thing kind of lies. For that kind of stuff, but definitely belief and intent, I think, is a huge thing when it comes to whether or not you want to move spirits on, or if there's a heaven or hell, or if trying to talk and communicate with the other side is actually going to be good or bad for a person.
And that was my point, that probably a topic in a whole different show. A lot of religions believe in purgatory, you know, so is that spirit there during that time of purgatory? And hasn't moved on yet, where others believe that, no, at the time of your death, you're immediately either going to heaven or you're going to hell. No in between. So, I mean, that's a whole different show in itself, I think, you know. With your investigation team, how many's on it?
Just the one. I'm very unique in that way, and it's good that you asked that question, because I get confused with having a team because I've got a website and I consider myself a paranormal investigator, and I want to be able to promote the fact that you don't actually have to be a part of a team to actually do this. Sure, I 100% believe that it's good to get experience within a team if you're just starting out. Absolutely. I think it's a great way to get an idea how dynamics work, what your strengths are, all sorts of stuff. Like as if you were to work in a company, literally, you know, that's the kind of thing in an organization. Get an idea of what you really kind of feel more drawn to, because you're not doing this, you know, for the pay packet. You're doing this because you love it, and it's an interest, and you want to be able to explore that more. So being in a team, you're going to be able to have that opportunity, and then branching out on your own, which is what I've done for the last 6 years, is actually I consult with other teams. So if there's a team that are a bit short on a case when it comes to people or a bit of research or knowledge, so it could be something where for me I have a very big interest when it comes to demonology, not because it's the D word, but because it's actually probably more the opposite, in the sense of I believe there are other explanations to demonology, but I'm open. So sometimes somebody might be possibly dealing with a case, they may want another opinion with certain things. You know, I can come in for that perspective, but also when it comes to events as well. So they might be running a paranormal investigation somewhere, that they may need an extra pair of hands or a different mind as well, or a different thought process when it comes to using equipment. I can usually jump in and help out with that as well. So I like the flexibility. You can be an independent paranormal investigator. It can actually be a thing. I'm a huge advocate for it, but it's got to be the right time with the right person who knows what they want to do. And I highly recommend that people find something they kind of specialize in, and that's what's going to help you be a really effective independent paranormal investigator.
Yeah, we have a place near where I live. Actually, it's in Newcastle, Pennsylvania, and it's called Hillview Manor. And it was an old hospital, which was turned into a nursing home to a psychic ward. Since it's been closed, it's brought tons and tons of people there for paranormal activity. I was trying to get in there for next month. I wanted to do a Halloween live podcast. Oh my God, it's like, you know, there's 20 or 30 paranormal teams and they're trying to get in there as well. But I have a friend of mine who works out of Pittsburgh who does the same thing you're doing. He does it by himself. And he made his own EVP, you know, designed it and claims it's better than anything on the market.
See, that's where I differ a little bit with that, because I don't advocate personally myself about going on to into places on your own. I think you can be an independent paranormal investigator, and it's cool with him. I mean, it works for him. He knows the area very well. He knows the locations very well. But as a general rule for me, I don't say, look, go on your own. Being independent means you're investigating actually on your own. It just means you get to choose who you wish to investigate with, and that's where my stance, I guess you could say, comes from. But yeah, by all, you know, if it fits for him and he's feeling safe, you know, that's great for him.
What type of equipment do you use?
I'm very old school with what I do. I know when I started out and I was like, yes, I'm going to do this on my own and I'm going to have this massive equipment. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to have two equipment cases and it's going to have the best stuff ever. After a while, I realized literally simple is best. So I have a notepad. I have an EMF detector, not to detect the possibility of spirits. It's actually to detect possible EMF fluctuations, only because I'm still learning myself a little bit more about how that may affect our environment, our minds and our brains, and how we interact. You know, some people can be very sensitive to EMF. If I'm dealing with private cases, so I have one of those. I've got a digital voice recorder and recently vamped up my video camera as well. Again, it's not to try and capture something that could possibly be paranormal. It's more the fact of actually recording what's happening around at the time. So if someone's feeling or sensing something, I have not just something audible, but I've got something visual to be able to back that up. So it's more from a recording perspective than just kind of detecting the possibility of spirit. So that's the kind of angle I take with the equipment I use. Like I said, really simple, very stripped back, very old school, and a lot more about observation as opposed to kind of asking out. But again, it depends on your environment. It depends where you are. So I could be in a paid environment where it's, you know, a historical, beautiful location. I'm there with other people. You know, it's a very different ball game using equipment as opposed to using it to help somebody who may feel like there might be something possibly paranormal happening in their home.
Here's a tricky question for you. What would you consider the difference between a ghost, a spirit, poltergeist, or a demon?
I would say intent. That's the only thing is intent. I think if there is to be a possible afterlife, it would be about intent. I think from a ghost perspective, from what I've been told by mediums, I'm about as mediumistic as the chair that I'm sitting on. So I will take their words at the moment for what their interpretation is. A ghost is something that can freely pass between our world and whatever it is passed beyond us. A spirit is one that can also do that as well, but have moved on. That's the difference. They've done what they've needed to do. It's about intent. They've moved on. A poltergeist, I think, is a completely different ball game. I think there's probably more possibility of somebody giving off a particular energy for things to move as opposed for it to be a spirit doing that. That's my personal opinion at the moment. It can change, and I'm happy for that to change. But there, of course, there are people that have moved into to locations that things move and happen and shift and, you know, cupboard doors open. And then once they move out and then they're in a new place, then that doesn't happen anymore. So, you know, there's more for me to research regarding that. But it's fascinating enough because I think it's just so intense. And the more intense the subject, the more fascinating. And, of course, which leads us on to the D word, demonic. Which is my favourite in the sense of because it instills such a fear. And that's the reason why I originally wanted to research it, was because there were certain places, you know, when I started this 10 years ago, that I wouldn't go into because my biggest fear was actually being demonically possessed. Now, I'm not Christian or Catholic in any particular faith whatsoever, so I really kind of challenged that and thought, well, why am I so fearful of this? I'm going to look at some research as to some plausible explanations as to why people, A, think about that they're going to be, or B, what can actually explain plausibly why that might not actually be happening to somebody. So I want to look at it from a realistic perspective. So for demonic stuff, it's really difficult to say. There's so much I want to say, but all I will say is that I think it's really up to the individual. I think there are many shades of grey. What a lot of people think is demonic very clearly isn't. With yourself or with people that you'll also have interviewed over time, they would have, I get lots of queries from people saying there's something demonic in my home. I've been experiencing this for years. If it's years, more than likely it wouldn't be demonic. You would know if it was or not. But then again, there's the other flip side. What else, how the help have you had from a medical professional? We've got to rule everything out because it is such an intense experience. Whether it's demonic or whether it's not, that person's going through literally a hell. So we just need to figure out which hell it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I see it.
I know when I started out looking for ghost stories in 1998 for my documentary, of course it was a whole lot different back then because we didn't have the internet to rely on. Now with social media, it's really blown up. I was doing some research yesterday and there's somewhere around 580,000 podcasters out there, you know. And it's unreal that 2,000 a week are coming aboard, even on Twitter. I mean, how many paranormal groups and people that's out there that you wouldn't see in 1998. And so it's so much easier now to get the word out. And even myself, like connecting with people like yourself and authors and people that's in film, their different views on it and the paranormal activities.
Absolutely. And you make a really good point with that because, you know, a lot of people when it comes to paranormal investigating now really don't like the fact there is social media. So although it's helped yourself and myself, there are people that are very against the fact that it's so easy to say, I'm an expert, look at me, look at me. And there's a particular term in parapsychology, which of course right now I have completely forgotten, that actually terms it where it's like, because I speak the loudest and I say I'm an expert, then that's what gives you should actually believe in that. And there's a lot of that around without somebody actually really backing that up. So look, I'm all for people being passionate about it, you know, wanting to do great stuff, providing really good information for other people and, you know, a difference of opinion as well. I think that's important too. We can't be too stale. But I think, you know, we really need to look behind the person that's actually providing that information and find out where they've got their background from, because a lot of people can, you know, they say that in England, the squeakiest wheel gets the most attention, you know, as it rolls across the floor. And it's that kind of thing. And, you know, we have to be very careful who's squeaking the loudest because they may not be able to back up their claims. So social media is awesome, but I think it's really, really important as investigators because that's what we do. We investigate claims. Why does it stop at just that? To be equally as investigative with the people that we choose to follow.
So you do most of your investigations in England?
Well, I've been here 2 weeks, so I haven't done any yet. At the time of this recording. The thing is, though, this is the irony of it all, is 10 years ago I lived here for a couple of years. And this is what spurred on my realization I can actually be a lot more active as a paranormal investigator than I was in Australia. So I came over here 10 years ago, or 12 years ago at that point, thinking, yeah, you know, do the traveling, working thing. I was with my ex at the time and everything was, you know, peachy. And then I was like, I love this paranormal stuff. Oh, look, there's these ghost shows, you know, and a lot of people will, you know, sort of frown upon them. And I can understand why, because there is negativeness that has come from these particular entertainment shows. I get that. But if it wasn't for these shows, for myself personally, I would not know that there's this whole other world out there that I can actually be actively doing this kind of stuff, but in my own way. And every month I was doing something all over London. So it was just, and it opened up the doors. I thought this is going to be fantastic. So when we decided to move back to Australia at the time, my ex was on a visa. I didn't have to be, brilliant. I thought, great, it's going to be the same in Australia. And it was just like, you know, tumbleweed across the floor, crickets in the background. There was nothing happening. It was, you had a couple of ghost tours, there was nothing really about paranormal investigating in Sydney, even in Sydney, like the biggest city in Australia. There was nothing. And I'm like, what have I got? I've gone from the creme de la creme. I'm walking through Tudor houses and all this kind of stuff, and the London tombs, you know, you're underneath, you know, burial pits and all sorts of stuff. And this, like, hello? Like, where's my refund? So I was bitterly disappointed. But, of course, there wasn't really anything for paranormal investigators in Australia at the time. And so that's what helped me start my website, which was accessparanormal.com. And it was originally for paranormal investigators in Australia. It just had team directories and events and a blog for recommended books, and that was pretty much it. It was this little sort of website. I thought, you know, because there was nothing just for Australia because it was just so small and we really didn't have a lot at the time, but I had to get to know what was happening in order to list it on the website, and that's how I am doing and been doing what I am today, is because I've had that option. And it's international. The website's well and truly international. It's international learning. I've not just made it about Australia, but it was definitely very Australia focused at the time. But yeah, we didn't have it like it was here, definitely in the UK, but even in the US, like just seeing the difference in the volume of people in the population just makes such a difference for what you can provide when it comes to possible paranormal events.
I had seen on your one of your sites about cryptomnesia, because when my mother was in the hospice care before she passed, she kept seeing my grandmother, like, say, in the corner of the room. And the nurse that was in the room with us, she says, oh, she's going through, she's having cryptomnesia right now. And I thought that was kind of interesting, you know, that she was saying she's bringing up a hidden memory, you know. So that's the first time I heard that word, you know. Then I seen it on your site, maybe a little different meaning. I don't know.
That's fascinating. And it's like, that for me is the first time I've heard that term used in the situation that you've just spoke about. Because to me, it's often, like I said, it's usually about people who may be considering themselves mediums that may possibly read a story in a newspaper of someone's, you know, murder or history or whatever the case may be, and then actually not know they've met that person and been able to recall any information but not know where it's come from. So it's like non-fraudulent sort of memory. But it's interesting. I've not actually heard it used in that way that you've just explained. So that's fascinating, and that is completely plausible. Absolutely. She could be going through something that has been recalled but has been well and truly forgotten for many years. It doesn't necessarily mean you have to have read a story. It can actually be something you've experienced as well. It doesn't mean, it's just the way our brains work, where they kind of file it away somewhere, a memory somewhere so far back that we have absolutely no recollection of it unless there's something that in some way stimulates that. So that's really fascinating. Here, there you go. I've learned something new already.
Well, actually, what my mother passed away with was Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease, and it's like a fast-progressing Alzheimer's. She said a lot of people think of Alzheimer's as you lose your memory. Certain things pop up at you, and sometimes it's the things that happened back in 1922, you know, or 1935, and they'll remember everything to that day. I mean, everything. The clothes, the perfume, the time. I thought that was interesting that she brought that up, because I asked her what was that, you know. But when I researched it later, you know, I came up with what your definition was. You know, I never heard it in the realm of a person who's with memory loss. Or she said, yeah, there's hidden memories in your brain,
and it can happen. And there's no intention, like I said, to be deceitful by those memories coming up either. And that's the thing with cryptomnesia. It's not, you know, a fraudulent thing. Like, you know, like suddenly she's like, oh, you know, these are memories I've had and I've not told you. It's like, this is something that's come up. She may not even recognize it's something that's actually happened before.
I see you have a convention this weekend.
Yes, there is. The Society of Psychical Research have their international yearly conference, which I'm really excited about because I've somehow timed my arrival to London to be able to at least go up for one day. It goes for 3 days. Actually, it kind of goes for 3.5 days, but because I'm working at the moment, I can only go up for 1 day. But it's still in London. Trains are fabulous, and not nothing like it is in Australia. You practically have to walk and or drive anywhere. So I would be catching the train up on the Saturday morning and spending the whole day there. There's one person there I'm really excited to meet. His name is Ashley Nibb, was with the K. For those who have been interested in the paranormal for a little while of yet, would may have actually heard of him. He's actually giving a very quick, beautiful talk about his experiences with a particular case. I'm really excited. I've been following this gentleman for a couple of years now, at least. So that's going to be great. There'll be people there that I've met when I went to the ASIP conference a couple of weeks ago myself. So there's all this, phenomena, psychology type sort of organisations that have been around for a very long time here in the UK. And I'm just so appreciative to be able to actually join and be a part of these events, in the sense of being able to be an attendee and absorb, this wonderful wealth of information about people studying the possibility of life after death and how our brains might possibly work outside of our bodies, and and the real science side of it, the exciting side of it. Because I think for myself, you get to a certain point where this is interesting, but I want to be able to take it to that next level. So yeah, going to these events are going to be just incredible. So that's what's happening this weekend, and you can tell I am slightly excited. I spoke at Scarefest in Kentucky last year.
Yeah, that was my next question to you. That's it. You beat me to it.
There you go. Oh, great minds think alike.
Yeah, I wish I knew about that, because I would have went to that. I just started getting online and hooking up with different groups, and like I say, different people I get to meet, and that was brought up, and I went back and looked at it, and I seen, you were, I think, a guest speaker there?
Yes, one of the guest speakers there, and it was an amazing experience. I was thinking, maybe five people might turn up. Like, most of the room was kind of filled out. It was like, it's all good 30 to 40 people, which I'm quite happy about, because it was late at night. It was late at night on the very first night. And so I thought, and mind you, demons, with all respect, demons sell, as they do respectfully. A lot of people are very interested because it's such a intense subject. And I talked about the plausible explanations for it. And I talked about, bits of similarities with mental illness and somebody who could be suffering what people would deem as demonic possession, and how just being aware as a paranormal investigator, how important that is, if that is something you wish to take on or at least have an idea of, because then once it gets to a serious level like that, you need to know to pass it on to someone who's going to be more professionally aware of being able to handle that sort of thing. So it was just fascinating, and I had some fabulous questions, but it certainly was one of those bucket list moments to have that. And I missed out going this year. It literally was on the weekend that's just passed of this particular recording, and I saw all the photos turn up, and I've been there 4 years in a row. And this is the first year I haven't been able to go, because having, moving to the other side of the world takes a lot of dollar, as we say in Australia. Mm-hmm. So I wish I could shake the money tree and be able to have gone back there. But clearly that wasn't the case this time around. But I can't, I can't say next year is a complete off the record either. So, they're fabulous people. It's a great event. It's huge. 8,000 people go through those doors over 3 days. Like, that's enormous compared to what I'm used to.
Heard it was a very big event. I'm going to try to make it next year.
Yeah. Oh, and the whole horror aspect is really cool. At first, I'm like, I'm really, really not into horror movies. Like, it's not my thing. But you go there and it's fun, because it's horror, it's death. Hashtag being a part of, semi-paranormal, if there's afterlife, that kind of thing. So you just end up having the best fun ever. It is just a really fun and lively atmosphere. It's been running for 12 years. It's changed ownership, and it's going from strength to strength, and it's really great. And and they are like my family sort of thing. But it was a really good experience, and a great experience to be able to talk about a really intense subject too. So, but at the end of the day, we have to remind ourselves why we're involved in it. You've got it's this intriguing possibility of things moving on their own, and people knowing stuff they shouldn't, and people experiencing, like you said, like you sister seeing apparitions. Like, how does that happen when there's nobody there? How the hell is she seeing that without actually being front loaded by information previously? So that is what I have to remind myself, and it sometimes can be difficult. Trust me, it doesn't always just naturally come when I hear about some not so great stuff. but you need to find people to help you get there as well. I think that's another thing too.
Yeah, I keep seeing people now, you know, in podcasting is people I'm in contact with. There are so many that are in it for just the money. You know, they keep saying, well, my numbers aren't growing, mm-hmm. or I'm going to get all of it because I don't have any listeners, or I'm not making any money off of this, you know. And I kind of like, if you're not into it just for the pleasure of, for yourself, I mean, if you're just in it for the money, you know, if you're making millions of, you know, sales, yeah, I mean, but, you know, you have to stay with it. If that's your desire, I keep telling people, don't look at the numbers. You know, when I started out, I only had like maybe 7 to 10 listeners a week, you know, and now I'm up to maybe 2,000 a week. So it's growing as I go along. So I'm hoping to hit 2,000 a day, you know, pretty soon. But, you know, it's just, I'll keep doing it, you know, cause I like what I'm doing and I like talking to people that have different views or, you know, ways of looking at an angle, a poltergeist or a ghost or demonic side of it, you know. So it's, to me, it's not about the money. It's about your desire and your love for what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Like you said, we don't get paid for it. And it's almost like you can't be yourself if you're not doing something or reading something or listening to something or being involved in some way with the paranormal. It's almost like that can't be you if you don't have that or access to be able to do that, you know, part of it when it comes to the paranormal. And that's how I have found it over the years. And I didn't understand that for a while. And then after a while, I'm like, yep, this is who I am. I'm just perpetually intrigued by it. I will never know the answer until I pass over. And if I do pass over, I'm going to be extremely loud, make lots of noises for everyone's audio recording, and just, you know, I will do my best. I will do my best.
It's been a joy really having you on the show today, listening to your side of the paranormal investigation and your Access Paranormal Learning Lounge and your accessparanormal.com page. Any other social media you can be found on?
I'm on YouTube and Twitter as well. If you want to look at some of the videos that I've created regarding a particular session that I called I Want to Know, which is all about all different types of topics regarding paranormal investigating, whether it comes to stigmata, to sliders, to how to actually travel with paranormal investigation equipment, how to deal with people who post those, you know, ghostly photos of orbs on social media. It's everything to do with all sorts of different types of topics. So that's also on YouTube as well. Look up Access Paranormal there too. But it's all centered on accessparanormal.com. I'm doing the International Ghost Hunting Days, you know. There's a location here in London called the Viaduct Tavern, which is huge. It's like it's actually small. Everything's small in London because everything's built small, but it's like a very iconic location as far as poltergeist activity, like the stuff that still happens up until only like months ago kind of thing. So I'm really excited for that because it's like, oh, it's like being a celebrity, you know. That's when you know investigators, when you go to locations and it's like, I'm going to Waverly Hills. It's like meeting Brad Pitt, you know what I mean?
Have you ever found it when you're speaking at an event that, like, say you're non-believers, that they stay around, they don't leave?
Yeah.
Like, okay, if you don't believe, why are you still here?
Yeah. yeah, exactly. And often it's been, I got invited last year to be a part of the Australian Skeptics Convention. It was, like, I think, their 37th year or something like that. And I was on their panel, and I was the paranormal investigator on that panel, and there was a ufologist and there was a crypto person, that kind of stuff. Very, very brave. I was surprised I didn't need a bodyguard at the time. You know, because I'm going into enemy territory. I had no idea how it was going to be received. And it was just so much fun because a lot of good, true skeptics actually enjoy the topic, even though they don't believe in it and they think it's full of crap. They actually really enjoy the fun of it. So the real true skeptics are the ones that enjoy the topic of it, but they just think, you know, it's crap. It's almost like talking like fairy tales and stuff like that. Like there's a magic about it, but they just think it just doesn't exist. so that they're the best skeptics to kind of work with. But then there's the horror, as we know, we've all dealt with those, what I call the cynical skeptics. They're the real hardcore, will shoot you down social media. I mean, I've been cut apart. I even did a blog on the fact there was one guy that tried to take me to shreds with comments about me proving the paranormal existed or didn't, and he was horrible about it, but he'd been known to be quite horrible. And I knew that at the time, it's like, you can't take this personally, because if someone's going to be horrible to you, they've been horrible to about 100 people before you, so you can't wear it like a shirt. You just got to kind of go, oh, well, you know, I'm just victim number 475, so keep moving. And Yeah, absolutely. And as I said, I keep doing what I'm doing, like as you do, you know, at the end of the day, we do it because we love it, because we invest our money and time into it. We take time away from our family and friends for it. And that's because we want to, not because we have to.
And I've seen so many different stories since I've been asking for stories. You know, a lot of times I go out, if it's local, I'll go to the place where the event's happening, you know. And it's been an eye-opener for me on a lot of different stories. Like, the best thing of the story was usually what comes behind the scenes, you know. So many things that it's just so weird the way things turn out. You go looking for one side, and all of a sudden you're hit with a different side.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's the best thing about people who really like being in the paranormal with the best intent are open to that. Being open to that, that's all you got to do. It's like, oh my gosh, you walk into an investigation sometimes and things will happen and you walk out with about 50 different other questions that you never thought possible about what someone has experienced that you've not seen before, whether they've felt a certain way, they've acted a certain way, and or you've seen something or they've heard something. You just come away with more questions, and that's the best part about it. We just walk away just going, this is bigger than what we thought. I know I'm never going to come up with the answer. Fabulous. But you know what? I'm going to have fun trying, you know?
Well, Beth, it's been a pleasure having you on the show today. Wanting to talk to you for a long time after seeing you on social media.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure being able to chat with you, and also to be able to be part of your fabulous podcast.
Well, thank you very much. I would like to thank Beth Darlington for all her knowledge and experience. It was an honor to have Beth on the show tonight. Also, a thank you to Weird on the Rocks for their promo and a very, very great podcast. If you'd like to promote your own podcast on mine, contact me at cooley54@gmail.com. See you in another 2 weeks on Ghosts in the Valley.